So matters are rising straight away.
Oh, yeah.
There is a patron saint of cheese.
Tell me more.
Well, I haven't learned that much because literally I found it out last week and then forgot about it till a few minutes just before this podcast. His name is Saint Uguzzo, also known as Lucio, San Uguzzon, San Luguzzoni, Saint Uguzzo, Saint Uguccioni, and Uguzzo Uguzzon.
Mm.
And this is according to the Oxford Companion to Cheese.
What?
Well, the Oxford Companion to Cheese, by the way, is a book. It's not you.
Oh, okay.
You would qualify for that title.
I'm the Worthing Companion to Cheese. Now, is he the patron saint of cheese itself or just cheesemongers?
Well, he's the patron of cheese makers, it says here, right. And he's invoked in cases of cattle and eye diseases.
Okay.
He appears in iconography, and this is a stained glass window waiting to happen, with a cheese cutter and a cheese with a slice cut out of it.
So what does that mean for us now?
Well, I think he's quite Alpine-based, if I'm honest.
Okay.
So I think that we can now open applications for a patron saint of British cheeses, really, I think.
Yeah, unless we can sort of merge this with St. Baldred's role.
That's true, we could. St. Baldred being the patron saint of this podcast.
Of the podcast, yeah. I mean, cheese goes hand in hand with the podcast, after all.
And he's not exactly doing a great job with the podcast, is
he? No, he's the saint of the bewildered.
Yeah. Okay, we'll do that. Welcome, everybody, to episode 334 of the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast. My name is Nick Page, and there is Joe Davis.
Still, yes, indeed. Hello, mate.
Hello, and this episode is brought to you by St. Baldred, patron saint of cheeses, British cheeses.
How do you swear in a new saint? I'm not quite sure what the etiquette is.
I just think you start rumours, really, start legends. Start.
Right.
That's all how it works.
Put it on X. Okay, great. Well, look, how are you, dear boy? Because how have you been over the last 4 days since I saw you?
I've been very good, yeah. I've had a bit of a sore back.
Have you?
Tell you that. Yes, because we went swimming, didn't we, in the sea?
We did, yeah.
And it was quite choppy in the first one. I think
it
was. I
think you pulled something.
I think I pulled several things, really. So, yeah, good. Yeah, no, we had a nice weekend.
The weather
was great, didn't we? So it was nice. So how have you been?
Very good. I posted, of course, that lovely picture of us in the woods. Oh, I think we'll save the feedback from that. For another time. I really enjoy. Also, may I say thank you for the scroppino that you made me.
It's very Italian this episode so far, isn't it, actually?
It is, isn't it? It's delightful.
So scroppino is a lovely drink. It's a sort of cocktail. It's made out of lemon sorbet.
Well, just leave it at that. It's made out of lemon sorbet. And there might be a bit of alcohol in it. I can't remember.
Well, a bit of Prosecco and a bit of something else, if you want. Look it up. Anyway, it's very lovely and very refreshing. And
it was very delicious. Yeah, thank you. And I appreciated the time and patience. And one day I may put the video of you making it up on our Facebook page. Hmm. Also, shout out to Miriam, visiting from New Zealand, who I met.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, lovely. Lovely listener. Wonderful lady. And just nice to spend time with listeners always. And here's the thing. Mm. So I met her on Monday. And of course, she came to cinema with us. Haven't been to cinema for a while. And we saw The Salt Path. I mean, so what do you know about this film?
I know about the book.
So you know the story. And also two great actors. We've got Jason Isaacs. We've got Gillian Anderson. You know, we've got a great story. What could possibly go wrong? I'll tell you what could go wrong. It's the small things that ruin the film. So for one, this really irritates me. There's this lovely scene in the woods and there are birds singing that clearly aren't British birds.
Now this is interesting because this would irritate you.
Now that upsets me. But that irritation, because I sort of get used to that, pales into insignificance alongside the scene where they're camping on the coast and they wake up in the morning and come out to so-called wild rabbits. But no, they're not wild rabbits. They're cute little fluffy pet rabbits.
Yeah.
That are very not English rabbits, wild rabbits. And you're just thinking, why? And then to cap it all off, There's a scene in the sea where they dive down underwater to basically visit a coral reef with, you know, turtles swimming by and a tropical fish. And I just, no, that's it. That's it. You've ruined the film now. Why would you do that? Now, the sea around Cornwall, as we all know, is beautiful. It's fantastic. But why do that? And before anyone writes in, I do know that a turtle was once spotted recently off the coast of Cornwall, but it's not a regular sight. And that irritated me. But apart from that, I'm fine.
See, you're sounding exactly like you. Like me when I watch a film about a historical bit that I know anything about.
Oh, yeah.
And generally speaking, I know more about every part of history than Hollywood filmmakers know. You're sounding just like me. I'm intrigued about the bird noises. What did they have then in the woods? Was it like a sort of toucan in the background?
I suspect so. I mean, I don't know because I know paradise. British birds. I'm not claiming to know the bird calls of all the birds in the world, but...
Some sort of macaw going on there. Anyway, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, anyway.
That must have been a painful experience for you.
Enough of my irritations. How are you?
Yeah, good. As I said, I really enjoyed the swimming. That was great.
That was lovely.
Didn't so much enjoy getting in and out. That was tougher on Worthing Beach. I think you really need to have some sand put in there, please.
Yes,
for my next visit.
I'll get that sorted.
I just enjoyed spending time with friends over that weekend, including yourself. You know, I think I was reflecting on it because I was talking to Claire about another friend, a mutual friend we had, and I was saying, the funny thing is, I've known this guy for years and years and years, or I've known him for years and years and years, and I said, I don't think I know him any better now than when I first met him. And I wonder if that's a good definition or a good differentiation between friends and acquaintances.
Yeah.
You know, acquaintances are people you know, but you never get to know better at any depth.
Sure.
Whereas, like, we talked late into the night, and I actually learnt stuff about you that I didn't know.
Yes, indeed.
And stuff I don't want to know either as well. That was part of that. But no, but it's like that. I think with friends, there's always movement, isn't there? You always get to know each other better. So that was lovely spending time with you and Rachel.
Well, we loved it. Thank you.
And I want to recommend a television programme. Simon Reeves.
Oh, yes.
Scandinavia.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Watch it. If you know Simon Reeves, sort of intrepid traveller. Yeah. The thing I love about Simon Reeves is he never just goes to a place and does the sort of, picture postcard stuff. He does that, but he always looks beyond it. He always finds other stories there. And so, you know, he just delves a bit deeper. So this is not like the normal travel stuff where you send two comedians off somewhere and oh the laughs.
Okay.
Sometimes happens, sometimes doesn't. This is very good. So Simon Reeves, Scandinavia, I recommend that.
Okay, thank you. Good. Right. Well, shall we move on?
I think we should now. Yeah, definitely.
Because we've got something a little bit different this week. Mm. We're not going to do feedback now. We'll save it all for next week because we've got an interview coming up.
We have. Now, tell us a little bit about this. You did this interview a few weeks ago.
I did. Well, as you may or may not know, you know, but perhaps the 17 don't know. Strangely, we get lots of letters to the or emails, I should say, to the Midfaith Crisis podcast saying, hey, we got a new book out, want to promote it, to which I always say just about no. However, one did come in that just it struck me as being really interesting. And against all my normal principles, I did follow it up with that I may be interested in this. And so they sent me a copy of the book, Finding Beauty Behind Bars, A Climate Activist's Enforced Retreat by Tim Hughes. Not that one. The Reverend Tim Hughes.
his own unique Tim Hughes.
Yes, his own unique Tim Hughes. And I liked what I was reading. It's an area that interests me in terms of, you know, it's a constant question. What do we need to do for the planet? What's my responsibility? What, you know, is the church's responsibility, government responsibility? You know, those sort of questions race around my head reasonably regularly. So I thought it'd be great to get him on the show. And just to say, you know, when you talk about climate change and all those sort of things, you know, the mood can get heavy quite quickly. And I'm very conscious that people listen to this podcast for a bit of light relief, especially if you're wrestling with deep theological questions and, you know, all the rest of it. And life's hard enough without sort of burdening people. It's a bit like watching the news. Why would you do that sometimes? However, you know, I don't want to be the guy that sticks my head in the sand.
Mm.
And I always want to remain hopeful. And Tim was a lovely guy, very humble guy, actually. But he's a lovely man and he's got something to say. So I thought it'd be great to get him on the show, interviewed him, and here it is.
Well, I am delighted to welcome to the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast the writer and author, Reverend Tim Hughes, author of Finding Beauty Behind Bars, A Climate Activist's Enforced Retreat. Tim, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks very much, Joe. It's good to be on it. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, thank you. And I've just learned that you've actually listened to it, which is...
Yeah, one of the 17.
You are one of the... That's great. So listen, straight up, I'll just say, normally you talk to a vicar and he's been to prison and it's because he's a chaplain, or it's going to be some big story about finding faith in prison, but you're an actual prisoner. So... This makes this very interesting indeed. But before we get into the meat of all that, Tim, I'm guessing one or two of our 17 may not have heard of you. So do tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, I'm 47. Well, that tells you I'm dyslexic, doesn't it? I'm 70. That's a good start. So I even got that wrong. So I'm 74. And... I live near Swindon. I was a village lad. I spent most of my youth in the fields and around the river near where I lived, in near Abingdon. Right. And so sort of immersed myself in nature, which I absolutely loved. Dog walking, all that sort of stuff, sailing, fishing. So that was a sort of basis of my upbringing. And then I met a lovely girl and we got married, and she was 19, I was 21. And then I was a dental student in Sheffield.
Right.
That was tough with having a family. I mean, that was a bit surprising for people, no doubt, to deal with a student with kids at that stage.
Right, yeah.
In those days, it was 50 years ago. We had four children until my mother-in-law gave me some advice, and she said if I didn't take it, she'd do it herself. And...
Well, we are here to talk about climate change.
Well, exactly. Yeah. So I did take her advice. And I worked as a dentist in Oxford for 27 years. And I know it sounds strange to people, but I absolutely loved it. I loved the people, and I loved it, working with a good team of people. And the other thing I really, really enjoyed was I was able to play music all day. You know, my choice. So I started with Vivaldi and then sort of gradually up the tempo a bit. So by the end of the afternoon, I was onto techno.
Oh, and, nice. And, that's a surprise.
My partner, who worked underneath me, you know, in the room underneath, he wasn't that chuffed because I had the speakers on the floor. And but anyway, so I was really blessed with finding a profession that I was really, really cut out for.
Yeah.
And then in 2003, I was ordained and in the Church of England, and worked as a self-supporting assisting priest since then.
Yeah. What do you think we need more of, priests or dentists in this country? I've got my own views on that.
I think you've answered the question.
Yeah, okay. Let's not go there. Okay, that's not what we're here to discuss. We are here to discuss the fact that you've written a book called Finding Beauty Behind Bars, because you have in fact done time. So why don't you start by telling us why a lovely dentist stroke priest has done time at Her Majesty's prison?
Well, I've been passionate about climate and the environment for over 20 years. And I, at one stage, under ministerial review, I told the bishop who was doing the review for me, you know, I feel I need to talk about this all the time. This was in 2007. And he said, Tim, I give you my permission to keep banging on about it as much as you like.
Right.
So I did. But actually, people didn't seem to engage with it. And in 2018, when Sir David Attenborough was on the podium standing next to Greta Thunberg, and he said of Greta and of her school, Non-Violent Direct Action School strike, He said that it represented for him the first glimmer of hope he'd seen for the planet.
Right.
And having been really animated about climate and the environment for ages, I threw myself into it because I wanted to try to fan that glimmer of hope into a flame
So, what
with
did
them.
throwing yourself into it mean?
Well, I joined Extinction Rebellion, which was the closest thing I could find that was doing that. They were advocating non-violent direct action, and I got involved with them. I was at a mass occupation of London in 2019 in September. There was masses of people there, tens of thousands, and in fact, I met a couple who were handing soup out, bread and soup, free to anyone. A smart-looking couple, and I asked them, what's this about? And they said, we are both coroners. We cannot actually take part in this, but we want to do something to support everybody is doing. So we're here to keep you fed. And
Wow.
then shortly after that, I walked down Parliament Street, and I heard on the radio that the then Prime Minister Boris Johnson, when he was talking about the occupation and people's intense passion about the fact that we are heading in the wrong direction with carbon economy and what was happening with climate and environment, he said of the occupation, he said it's only a few old crusties smelling of hemp.
Oh, really?
And I was so incensed because
Yeah.
there was such a wealth of
Yeah.
backgrounds of people. And I lay down in the road and I thought, this is it.
That's all you needed. Yeah.
I could not, do anything else. And actually, there was a samba band, the Extinction Rebellion samba band, which is often around, and it was coming up Parliament Street, being followed by a police cordon. And so the samba band stepped over me, and the cordon came up, and I was sort of swept up and arrested. So that was how it started.
Wow. So let's get to the actual reason you were sent to jail, because that wasn't the occasion, was it? Or was
No,
it? No.
no. So, ironically, I was just I'd been asked to speak at Wadham College in Oxford in an evening service about being a Christian and a climate activist, and I'd come back early from a family party, and I'd got in the shower and got out. It was about 3 o'clock in the Sunday afternoon. Got out, and there was a sort of commotion out in the garden. I put my head out the bedroom window because I was still dripping wet. And there were eight Met police from the territorial division in my garden shouting at, come down now and open the door or we'll break it down. It was just mind-boggling. I couldn't actually make my mind up whether to get dressed or first or afterwards. And I thought, actually, modesty demands I get dressed first. Well, at least put some trousers on. And so I went down and I was handcuffed, pushed onto the sofa, and they said, we've got information that you've been training people to climb into gantries over the M25 and cause mass disruption. Had it actually not been so serious, I mean, conspiracy to cause a public nuisance, which was the charge, eventual charge, is a serious charge. Conspiracy can actually carry a life sentence.
Any really?
Oh, yeah.
Well.
But I mean, those circumstances, they were so ridiculous that had it not been such a serious event, I'd have laughed because
Sure.
I've only ever been climbing once. That was when I was 17, and I didn't like it. So the thought that I'd actually been teaching people to climb into gantries was absolutely
Yeah,
bonkers. But yeah, hey, they searched the house, but they're looking for climbing gear. Of course, they didn't find any because I haven't got any. I got some camping rope, but that was it. But you wouldn't want to swing from a gantry by that. So I was taken into custody. I mean, I had been on a Zoom that was talking about that, but I didn't take part in the Zoom. But those two things combined,
Right.
they'd put some,
That was enough, yeah.
they'd put it together and come up with something that was a bit bonkers, really. But anyway, so I was denied bail
Because
and
you're such a menace to the public.
apparently,
Yeah.
and I finished up for a month in Wormwood Scrubs and then 2 weeks in Wandsworth.
And you were in with some pretty nasty characters, really, to be fair.
There were some pretty tough people there. Yeah, I
Yeah.
mean, it was there were moments that were quite chilling. I was in a shower. I don't know why you get locked in a shower, but I was locked in the shower with four big guys, and one of them said, "Oh, do you smoke weed?" And I said, "No, I don't smoke anything." And they said, "What are you in for?" Which actually is taboo.
Right.
You don't ask that question. But I was initially a little anxious about answering that, but then it was better for me to answer it than actually say, than people to make an assumption that somebody, I was clearly unusual character in prison, so their assumption would be that I was a paedophile.
And then you're really in trouble.
Then I was, and so I was in, in the showers. A guy said, "What are you in for?" I said, "Well, I'm a climate activist." And he said, "Oh, Just Stop Oil, all those guys, are you?" And I said, "Yeah, that's right." And somebody in the, just near him said, "I don't believe you." And he said, "You just made that up." And I said, "Well, why would I do that? Being a bit ignorant about these things." And he said, "No, you just made that up." And as I stripped off, they saw my Extinction Rebellion tattoo, and the guy,
Really?
the guy in the shower, he said, "Oh, guy, yeah, so Extinction Rebellion, good for you, man." And that saved me
Wow.
from being beaten up or worse. So
Wow.
yeah, it was there were some alarming moments, yeah.
And like you mentioned a bit about the frustration of it, but you stand in a good tradition of non-violence and protesting. How do you cope with the dissonance of disrupting, Extinction Rebellion, not you personally necessarily, but, I mean, I remember doing funerals at the time and, people missed them because there were holdups on the M25. And, I know of others who perhaps missed hospital appointments and things. I mean, you join those things, and of course, everyone joins in this mass anger, forgets about the actual root issue that has caused it, and focuses on the protesters. How did you deal with that?
Well, yes, it's interesting you should say that. Dissonance is actually a very relevant word. I mean, the key thing for me is that the situation we are in is so serious, and the government at that stage were heading in absolutely the wrong direction. They were saying they were going to open 130 new oil wells. And Sir David King, the scientific advisor of the government, previously had said, this is madness. We can't open any new oil wells. And he had actually said, and the UN Secretary General had said, we've opened the gates of hell. And yet, the government seemed to be foot down, driving straight through those gates. So what can you do? You've got to
No,
try to
yes.
wrestle the steering wheel away, So the point about, I mean, I have blocked the M25 when I was with Insulate Britain on a number of occasions. So I understand that the frustration, the anger, and all that from the drivers. In fact, a relative of mine, with the gantry action, he was prevented from going to a funeral, and he was very upset with it, very angry with me. But as you know, I went to a trial which finished actually only 2 or 3 months ago, and the jury found me not guilty of conspiring to cause public nuisance. So, but I did take part in the previous year. So I do understand that. But actually, what are we supposed to do?
How serious is the issue? I mean, for those that just, treat us as ignorant, how serious is
Well,
the issue now?
scientists say that currently 1% of the landmass of the planet, about 1%, is uninhabitable. Climate scientists predict that in the not too distant future, because of the emissions, global warming, climate emergency, that percentage is going to go up to 20%.
In what sort of time frame would they be talking? Next
Ten,
100
fifteen.
years?
No, much quicker than that. So that would mean Central America, uninhabitable, Central Africa, the subcontinent, Australia, uninhabitable. And the reason for it's uninhabitable, scientists tell us that if the average temperature is 30 degrees or above in a country, then crops won't grow. And we're actually beginning to see that now, aren't we? In the UK, we're still, the climate in the UK is still moderate, but we can still grow stuff. But actually, the farmers are struggling, aren't they?
They're struggling this year because there hasn't been any rain. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So these climate anomalies are now constant and will be.
Yeah.
You know, we have mass floods. Southern Europe's had that. There's been fires. 40 degrees in the UK is mad. Whoever thought that would happen? And these extraordinary climate events are happening constantly now. Glaciers are melting. The tundra in Russia is on fire. You can't put it out, and it doesn't go out during the winter. It just smoulders. It's got a ghost fire underneath, and then breaks out. So, you know, the planet's in a terrible mess, and that's why we need drastic change. And Just Stop Oil, with Insulate Britain, I was involved with that because actually the quickest way to get to reduce emissions in the country was for us to insulate social housing. And, you know, it was a no-brainer. And actually, the government in 2010 had said they were going to do it, but changed their mind, you know, because they've been lent on by lobby groups who represent the fossil fuel companies and by media moguls who
Yeah.
are still wedded to it.
Can see profits going. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So we're in serious trouble, and that's why I was in, you know, got involved with these climate protests.
And do you mind me asking, do you have grandchildren?
I do. So that's what I really fear. Sir David Attenborough said that we are facing the end of civilization and the natural world. You know, if you think
Yeah.
in what the end of breakdown in civilization means, I mean, we saw a bit of it in the summer, didn't we, with the far right stuff. But
Yeah, sure.
when you've got 20% of the landmass of the world uninhabitable,
Yeah.
everybody who currently lives there will be moving.
Yeah.
The mass population movements like we've never seen before.
Yeah.
And they're beginning to take place now. You know, the immigration issues, which are a political hot potato at the moment, but it's minor compared with what it's going to be like.
Yeah,
You
sure.
can't stop people if we've made that people's land uninhabitable. We
Yeah.
can't complain when they move away, and that's what's happening. This mass movement of
Sure.
population. Have we missed the boat with it? Well, we probably
Yeah.
have. We have. I mean, the tipping
Yeah,
point's.
well, I was going to ask you, what hope do you think there is, and where do you stand, and what's your hope for your grandchildren?
Well, the reason that I've been taking part in climate activism was because I do not want my grandchildren to experience what a breakdown in civilization is like. You know, like Kristallnacht in Germany in 38. Or you can see it across the world. Examples, I didn't have to spell them out. There are lots of examples across the world where civilization is broken down. I don't want my grandchildren to experience that. But I can't see a way that actually that's going to happen. Talking about utopia, that's long, long gone.
Okay.
The dystopian talk, you know, which we have been doing, I think the time for that has gone as well. I
Right.
think what we need to be talking about is what Rupert Read calls throughtopian. We've got to get through this. You know,
Yeah.
we're facing a sort of it's like a river of uncertainty, of a torrent that we've actually got to somehow get across. I think we can do that. I mean, life is going to be vastly different. I don't know what that's going to involve for my grandchildren, but I hope that they will have the tools to be able to navigate that in some way. And I think that we've all got to learn that.
Yeah. I mean, it's so massive, this, you know. I think the way I've coped, you know, put my hands up to that, and many cope, is by just go, do you know what, it's too big to think about. I can't do anything. What would you like to see? This breaks down to a few questions. What would you like to see governments do? Ed Miliband, I guess, at the moment. What would you like to see individuals do? What would you like to see churches do?
Well, I think as far as government's concerned, I mean, one of the reasons that Just Stop Oil has liquidated itself, if you like, is because government have made assurances that they will not be opening new gas and oil fields. So the actual objective of Just Stop Oil is achieved.
Okay.
The fact that government had brought in draconian laws to squash any protest, including climate protests, and what
Yeah.
that means is another issue.
Yeah, sure.
But I would like government to use the climate and environmental emergency as like a template. So you put it on the desk, and any policies that you want to create, You put that onto the template and cut around the edges. Anything that doesn't fit within that template, you can't do. It's short-termism. It might buy you a few votes over the next election, but it's not going to do us any good in the long term. I'm talking 5, 10, 15, 20, 100 years. We need policies that are going to actually be looking that far ahead. But, we're not geared up for that. Our democracy, such that it is more of a, it's more of a plutocracy in some respects, in that the very wealthy, the very powerful, have an undue influence on the
For sure.
policies. But so I don't know how that's going to happen. I see my role as I wanted to draw attention to it. My bishop actually said, "Well, you're a prophet, Tim. You're in a very difficult place," and he's been very supportive, not comprehensively, and I recognise that. But he's been very supportive of me. I think we need as a society, as a government, we need to give us some guidance. As individuals, we need to do the best we can to teach our loved ones enoughism, to recycle, reuse, and because we can't live on resources of two planets. We've only got one, and we pretty well use those up. So we've actually got to show our loved ones how to live appropriately in this new era. We've also got to try to show them, and I think this can be might be it's difficult, and for people of faith it is challenging. We've actually got to show them life is worth living, because some of our young people do not actually think that. I mean, I've got friends who've they said, "I've got a plan. I don't want to be around when it kicks off." So,
Really?
so these are young people who are activists who say, a lot of us have got plans.
Wow.
So,
That's very sobering.
which brings us to the church. Where is the church in all this? I can't speak about nonconformist church, but I can give you my views on the Church of England. Church of England is the established church. It's part of the establishment. So to challenge the establishment, which actually is a fossil fuel establishment. I mean, we set it up, in Victorian times. We pioneered it for the world. It was did a fantastic job, and now look at this mess we got in. For the church to challenge that is actually uniquely difficult from a church's point of view. But we've got to do it. As Christians, we're committed to compassion and loving our neighbor, and that includes those who are being displaced by the actions that we've taken. So I think the church has got a lot to do in this, and it's been slow off the mark.
And do you want to see presumably this issue kind of fairly center and foremost on the agenda rather than a kind of once a year we're going to do a climate change service?
So I was in St. Paul's Cathedral about 3 years ago. 2 or 3 years ago, when near the end of a service, Christian Climate Action actually went to the front and did a sit-in in front of the service as the service was finishing, because we wanted the Diocese of London not to invest in fossil fuel companies, but a lot they were then invested in fossil fuel companies. We wanted them to divest, and there was about 30 of us got arrested because of that, and I was in custody for that. Now there's been a move, and most of the dioceses, I think perhaps all dioceses, have now divested from fossil fuels. So that was good. But they need to continue these moves and actually be giving much stronger leadership. And actually, during that service, the person who gave the sermon, she mentioned fossil fuels and then did the entire sermon on a theological point, which was in the gospel. Didn't mention anything political or controversial afterwards. And I said to her afterwards, I said, "Why don't you preach on climate and the environment?" And she said, "I'll do that when the reading dictates it." And
And
I
there
thought,
you go.
what a cop out. I couldn't believe it.
Well, look, we need to bring this to a close. I mean, this is, I'm not going to lie, this is one of the harder interviews because we're talking about such a serious and potentially such a sort of depressing subject. Is there anything else you'd like to say to our wonderful listeners listening here? Perhaps they've thinking, well, yeah, I'd like to do something. What next steps could they take, do you think, other than
Well,
buying the fabulous book Finding Beauty Behind Bars by Reverend Tim Hughes?
yeah, well, yeah, I must put in a plug for the book, in that it's not doom and gloom. I
No, it
mean,
isn't.
I wrote it because I was trying to find some evidence of God in prison, because I was having difficulty outside prison, and I actually did find that. So I was hugely encouraged, and I'd like the book to be a source of encouragement to people. But I think what I hope is that, when we face this sort of life-defining barrier of climate and environmental emergency, that we don't take the course of least resistance and block it out. I'd like us to live courageously, to live with that tension, and to live courageously as best we can. I mean, we've got to live the life that we are proud to live. We've got to look ourselves in the mirror. So I want to be the sort of person, the best version of me that I can be within these circumstances. And it's a struggle. That's my hope for people, and I think we can do it. And within the book, there's elements of hope which fueled me. So the message is a call for courage and a vision of hope.
Great. Well, Tim, that is absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for guesting on the podcast. We really appreciate it, and we wish you all the best for the book and very best wishes for the future.
So thank you, and I really appreciate you calling me on. Thank you.
It's lovely talking to you. Bless you, mate. Bye-bye.
Cheers, then.
Well, that was Joe speaking to the Reverend Tim Hughes. What a fascinating, enlightening story. I have to say, I don't quite know how to respond to it, if I'm honest, because it's you're talking about something that's existential here. You're talking about an existential threat to the planet, to people. It's so vast and big, and here am I, one bloke sitting in his cupboard in Oxfordshire, and so I don't know where we go with it. I would like to start by talking about one particular aspect of it, though.
Yeah, go on.
Which is what Tim did. Now we can debate the merits of
yes,
the tactics, if you like, of Extinction Rebellion. What he did, however, is thoroughly Jesus-like in a way, because Jesus pretty much invented non-violent protest.
Yeah.
In the Sermon on the Mount, when he talks about that resistance, that is, nobody else was doing that. And so he's a pioneer in that. And so I think that you can't really question it on that level. You can't say you're behaving in an un-Christian manner. No, 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 very opposite. No.
You might be being irritating, but you're doing it in the Jesus way.
Well, I'm sure Jesus was irritating.
Yeah,
to people
no,
in power.
I think Jesus really was irritating. He was a great irritant.
So I think again, we can talk about tactics if we want, but I don't think it's worth getting into that. But I think the principle of protest is very important, really, and it's thoroughly Christian in these kind of issues. Yeah.
Yeah, and it does just raise those big issues, especially when you sort of listen to an interview that alongside the world news that's going on at the moment, the wealth of the arms industry and how that is being bankrolled by governments at the moment, and the priorities that governments have. And I thought that was quite revealing. When he talked about the protest in the church, and he asked the lady when she's going to talk about, I'll do it when the reading dictates it, which I thought was, a very revealing and very sad response to perhaps one of the greatest challenges the world is facing. And someone's basically saying, well, I'm going to be silent upon it unless I happen to come across it.
So I think the challenge I'm facing out of it is, how do I live a life of hope?
Yes.
Which I feel I'm called to as a Christian, without drowning in the fear and the hopelessness that it seems to be around. Because he's right, we've passed the tipping point. The governments are not going to do anything about it that's meaningful.
Yeah,
because they are driven by power and greed and putting their own interests first, and so they're not going to do it.
Yeah, of course.
And so the question is, what do I do? How do I respond to that? I mean, I'm talking very personally about Nick. What do I do?
Yeah.
Not a sort of general eye. And I'm trying to think through what that looks like.
Yeah, I think I feel similarly. I think, you know, I want to be the kind of person that I, you know, my grandson can one day be proud of in terms of how I live. But also, I think the question it's raised in my mind is, what is my civic duty? You know, what is, okay, I get that, you know, I can recycle and, you know, maybe I'll get solar panels or maybe, you know, I can think through the issues of renewable energy for me and, you know, recycling and what's good for the planet, and I can care for my section of the planet. But what is my role sort of to the wider community? You know, do I protest? Should I protest? Who do, you know, do I write letters? We do live in a democracy and we take it for granted so much of the time. And we may have a lot of questions about our democracy and the style of democracy it has become. But I'm sort of just trying to figure out, you know, what do I need to do on a more, you know, with others to make my opinions heard and known and to hopefully make a difference.
I think in essence, it sort of comes down to something that we say an awful lot on the podcast, you know, which is that you do the next good thing. Being in the kingdom of God means doing the next good thing. And so you do what you can as an individual. You look at your own lifestyle choices and you question what you can do there within the money you've got and the power that you've got. And you speak truth to power as best you can. You try and talk to people who do have the power or might have influence to change things. You look where your money's invested. You try, I think, to do as many of those little good things that you can in the hope that if enough of us do them, they will accumulate a bit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, an ocean has a lot of drops of water. So, you know, I've got one of those drops. So what can I do?
So I think we can't afford to give in to despair. I don't think, and I
No,
don't think that's
exactly.
what Tim was saying at all. In fact, you know, was saying at the end, I think was quite powerful. I think we have huge difficulties to face, but we sort of keep going. We do what we can and do the next good thing.
I agree. And I think for me, one of the most disturbing things he said was when he was talking about the young people who knew who had an exit strategy. And what he
Oh
was
yeah.
talking
Oh, that
about
was shocking.
was talking about them taking their own lives when it gets so bad. And I think, you know, for us of people of faith, whatever faith we have now, this must make a difference, you know, these kind of end time scenarios. And you know, I do hope that people listening haven't responded with a very, I'm so depressed about all these statistics I've just had. I hope it motivates them to engage at the level they can. But the message that I've heard you saying and that I certainly want to echo is that we are called to live hopefully in this world with all its troubles. And it's a world dripping in God's love. And so, you know, let's access the love of God and let's live hopefully within the context we're in.
I think the other shocking thing I found was that his basic treatment by the justice system.
Yeah, that was unbelievable, wasn't it? I mean, basically thrown to the floor and handcuffed in your own home.
Yeah, and put into prison and denied bail, you know, and put into
Yeah,
prison.
why?
And well, because they're trying to clamp down on this kind of protest, aren't they? But I think that was really shocking. And so, you know, I think really kudos to Tim for writing that story and for framing it that way. I think that's really important. We need to know what's going on in that world.
And I need to say that the book, which is excellent and a good read, is not so much about climate change. It is about his experiences of, you know, where one finds the divine in prison behind bars. So
Oh, fantastic.
I should say that it's not a book full of lots of statistics. I wanted to sort of get that climate change agenda in. But the book is a lovely reflection on kind of life behind bars. So well worth a read. Finding Beauty Behind Bars by Tim Hughes.
And of course, you know, climate change is real, it's happening, but there are some interesting knock-on effects to it, and I think one of which is that you get coral reefs and turtles off the coast of Cornwall.
Exactly. Very progressive filmmakers are
Yeah.
already making their views known, and
So, you know.
tropical birds.
So, yeah, tropical birds in the woodlands of Devon. Anyway, yeah. Well, listen, thank you ever so much for listening, everybody. Thank you for being with us. We hope that's given you food for thought. Do write in and let us know maybe what you're doing or how you can respond. That would be great to hear. And all ideas gratefully received. Thanks very much for listening. Thanks to everyone who supports the podcast. That's a wonderful thing.
It is.
Thank you to those who recommend it to others. That's really the only advertising we ever do. And so that's really helpful to us. And we will be back next week
with some joyful feedback.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look forward to it.